People today can spend half their lives over 50. So it's good to be financially ready for what's important to you as you get older, like a family vacation.
Cannonball!
Or starting your dream business.
Welcome to Connie's Coffee. How may I help you?
AARP's trusted financial tools can help you plan for whatever your future holds. That's why the younger you are, the more you need AARP. Start planning today at aarp.org/moneytools.
Hey there. I host a show called Therapy Gecko, where I dress up as a lizard and talk to anonymous strangers from the internet about their lives. They tell me their relationship problems.
I found out that I was related to the guy that I was dating.
Their hobbies.
I collect my roommate's toenails and fingernails.
Their secrets.
When we did not have toilet paper, I would use the shower curtain.
And also sometimes kind of serious stuff.
I have anxiety when I talk to people.
I'm also sometimes joined by celebrity guests like Doja Cat, Lil Yachty, Bobby Lee, and Eric Andre. Some of the more interesting calls we've gotten recently include a guy who argued with a demon living on his wall, a caller drunk at his job at a middle school, and a caller wondering whether or not he should transform into a dog. So if you're sick of your own life and you want to get lost in the life of a stranger, search for Therapy Gecko wherever you get your podcasts.
Ditch the clowns on the left
and the jokers on the right
and join Michael Smirkanish right here in the middle.
This is the Smirkanish Podcast for independent minds.
So I am like Billy Ray Valentine. Capricorn, in Trading Places. You got to break down this banking story for me into bite-sized pieces. That's why I think I was drawn to Larry Summers' tweet. Larry Summers, the former Harvard president, Treasury Secretary for President Clinton, director for President Obama of, what, the National Economic Council. He's held all those jobs. SVB committed one of the most elementary errors in banking. Borrowing money in the short term and investing in the long term. When interest rates went up, the assets lost their value and put the institution in a problematic situation. A judicious use of 270 characters or less. Yesterday, the poll question at Smirkanish.com on this entire situation asked, should the government have protected all SVB deposits, not just those at or below the FDIC limit of $250,000. Obviously, I could have had signature in that question as well, but both of them. Should the government have protected all of the depositors? I thought this was really interesting. There were nearly 20,000 who voted yesterday, and the no votes were decisive, 67.97%. Can we round it and say 70-30, those who voted at my website yesterday think the government made the wrong call in protecting everybody? And I don't mean the shareholders. I don't mean the investors. I mean among the depositors. Today's issue is, what do we call this? The FDIC insures, usually, depositors up to $250,000. By now, we all know that, right? Here, the Biden administration has extended that insurance to all depositors at both of those banks, Signature and SVB, not to the investors, not to the shareholders. It'll be paid by the FDIC's Deposit Insurance Fund, which is a reserve that's paid for by quarterly fees on the banks. As of the end of the calendar year, there were $128.2 billion. There was $128.2 billion held in reserve by that deposit insurance fund. SVB had $175 billion in deposits, or about $156 billion uninsured. If that's as far as it goes, then taxpayers will not bear the brunt. But if the fees are ultimately paid or ultimately borne by the banks, and the banks have to assess fees on their customers in order to pay that amount, well, then it's got an impact on banking customers, right? Maybe not taxpayers per se. So what exactly do you call it? A hybrid? And what if there's contagion? I said yesterday on the issue of whether to extend insurance beyond the FDIC limit that there's a crowd psychology issue here. There's a I don't know, maybe it's a mob mentality aspect of it that really interests me. Let me explain it this way. When I came on air yesterday, in fact, we began the program 4 or 5 minutes early because it coincided with President Biden's announcement. He was eager to speak before the markets opened. And the president's announcement yesterday was meant to send a message to the nation. The message being, you don't have to pull your money out. The banking system is fine. Your deposits are safe. The funding is plentiful. And what was the point? What was the goal? The goal was to avert a bank run that could turn all the markets completely upside down and impact the broader economy. Was it successful? That which he said and the moves that have been made by the administration so far, I think too soon to tell. Does covering the losses beyond, this is the psychology issue as I see it. Does the covering of losses above, I was going to say beyond, but above $250,000, does that cause overall more people to keep their money in the banks? As in, hey, the government's got this covered. They took care of those people. If I'm one of the few who has more than $250,000 in any particular bank, the government's going to look out for me too. I don't need to do anything. Or do observers say, well, wait a minute, they're doing it for Signature and they're doing it for SVB. They can't possibly do it for everybody. Therefore, I need to go and move my money from, say, a regional bank into one of the half dozen major banks nationwide in the United States. And the added aspect is whether the government covering above $250,000 unintentionally leads to riskier bank behavior because banks feel like they're going to get bailed out. Oops, I said it, but they're going to get bailed out too. You know, does it create an expectation that the government is not going to let any bank of consequence fail? One of the signals that the rescue arguably sent to depositors, if you hold a large bank account, the moves suggest that the government's going to step in and protect you too in a crisis. And then, of course, everybody goes back and reflects on 2008, the handling of Bear Stearns as compared to the handling of Lehman Brothers. And I guess my point is that the rules don't seem fixed. You know, the rules don't seem to always apply in the same way to everybody. And ideology in a circumstance like this tends to get thrown out of the window. Sheila Bair is a former banking regulator, was in that role in 2008 and was on CNN this morning talking about the fear factor. She said that she hopes people keep their head after SVB's collapse, adding that she thinks the problem facing the banking sector is more about fear than insolvency. That would be a good question, although I think that fear would win out decisively. You know, what are we dealing with more right now, fear or insolvency? She told Poppy Harlow on CNN's morning show that it's not clear if more banks will fail, but said the Silicon Valley Bank was embroiled in an unusual situation. I hope people keep their head. I think most of the regional banks are just fine, but it concerns me that everybody is getting tagged with the same problems SVB had, and that was an unusual situation. I do think fear is the problem now, not so much solvency. I've read a number of stories, and some of them are posted at smirconish.com today as to what the experts are saying, and is this a bailout? For example, Stephen Kelly is a senior research associate at Yale's program on financial stability. He said the Fed had basically just written insurance on interest rate risk for the whole banking system. And that, he said, could stoke future risk-taking by implying that the Fed will step in if things go awry. My observation, that if other banks see SVB and Signature being rescued, should I use that word, then what motivation do they have to change their risky practices? Stephen Kelly says, I'll call it a bailout of the system. It lowers the threshold for the expectation of where emergency steps kick in. Today's update, as I'm seeing what has transpired since we were last together, has to do largely, I think, with those regional banks. I want to read you three paragraphs or so from MarketWatch. It begins this way. The unexpected demise of Signature Bank over the weekend on the heels of the failure of Silicon Valley Bank ignited a shoot-first, ask-questions-later reaction among the regional bank investors as customers moved deposits to the largest U.S. banks for perceived safekeeping, so said observers. Right. That's the issue of, you see that SVB is getting bailed out, but, you know, they can't do that for everybody. I'm going to move from my regional bank and I'm going to go to one of the biggies. First Republic Bank down 61% in terms of their share value yesterday. Western Alliance Bank Corp down 47%. PacWest 21%. Zions Bank Corp down 25%. That's one part of the Market Watch report. Then they quote a Jenny Montgomery Scott bank analyst named Christopher Marinac, who said investors are scared by a flight of deposits to the too big to fail banks. It's a perception problem that's become a perception crisis. Yes, this is the mob mentality. This is the crowd psychology. People are saying my bank is too much in size, like SVB or Signature. I'm going to go to one of the biggies. Even though the Federal Reserve announced a new backstop program and President Biden declared U.S. banks safe, investors remain skeptical about the fixes in place for the banking system, or they simply haven't taken the time to absorb the moves by regulators to calm investors. So said Marinac, there's a disbelief out there, a disbelief that there are no more failures coming. And then finally, this that I highlighted. Looking ahead, Marinac expects the Federal Deposit Insurance Corps to find buyers for both Silicon Valley Bank and Signature Bank, which he thinks should alleviate the risk of deposit runs. During the financial crisis a decade and a half ago, the federal government established six U.S. banks as systematically important financial institutions, or SIFIs, S-I-F-I-S, J.P. Morgan Chase, Bank of America, Wells Fargo, Citigroup, Goldman Sachs, and Morgan Stanley. Today's poll at Smirconish.com, what do we call it? Is the Biden administration response to the failure of SVB properly described, fairly described as a bailout? No politician wants to be attached to the B word. From the Times today, while the definition of bailout is ill-defined, it is typically applied when an institution or investor is saved by government intervention from the consequences of reckless risk-taking. The term became a swear word in the wake of the 2008 financial crisis after the government engineered a rescue of big banks and other financial firms using taxpayer money with little to no consequences for the executives who made bad bets that brought the financial system close to the abyss. President Biden, speaking from the White House yesterday, tried to make it clear he doesn't consider what the government is doing a bailout in a traditional sense because the investors are going to lose money and taxpayers will not be on the hook for losses. To which I would add, at least initially. Is the Biden administration response to the failure of SVB fairly described as a bailout? When I voted, which was early this morning, soon after the poll question went up, 57% said no. No, it's not a bailout. At that time, I was the 166th to vote. 57% said no. It is not a bailout. I'm not saying I voted with the majority. I'm just telling you what the vote was when only a handful had voted. Before coming on air, I took another peek. The 57% was now 55%, and 4,354 had voted. Are we still at the 55%? I'm just always fascinated by, are the first ones in the door representative of how everybody's going to look at this?
We're now at 8,302 votes.
Okay, started at 57%, said no, it's not a bailout, dropped to 55.
Up to 56.
Oh, okay. Well, there we are. We're in the sweet spot now, don't you think? Okay, so somewhere in the 55 to 57% range, people are giving the White House, I'll say, the benefit of the doubt because the president does not want this regarded as a bailout. Well, what is it? And what of, I'm really curious as to whether any of you, especially if you're a large depositor, I mean, I don't know how many people are in my own orbit. I don't think many who have 250,000 liquid in a particular bank, but maybe I'm wrong and maybe you do. We heard from some yesterday. But the question I would most want to ask, and I don't want to limit it only to a large depositor, but I'd surely love to hear from you if you're in that category. Have you moved anything? Have you done anything differently in the last 24 hours? And if you haven't, for everybody else, for all of us, anybody moving money today because you're looking at this? I mean, obviously, the White House is hoping that there's not a panic, that there's not a contagion, that people aren't moving funds, particularly from regional banks, because no bank, you know, what did we learn from It's a Wonderful Life? No bank could sustain a run because the money is in, you know, somebody else's mortgage, as George Bailey explained so eloquently. Are you inclined to do anything today? For what it's worth, I'm doing nothing. I am doing nothing. I'm just letting this thing ride out because I buy into the logic that says fear is the bigger issue today than insolvency. Is the Biden administration response to the failure of SVB fairly described as a bailout? It's now taking on a political connotation. You can imagine people are lining up in red and blue jerseys to weigh in on that. But I want to know what you say.
This is the Smirconish Podcast from SiriusXM.
Hey, quick math. The less your business spends on operations, on multiple systems, on delivering your product or service, the more margin you have and the more money you keep. But with higher expenses on materials, employees, distribution, and borrowing, everything costs more. NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, HR into one platform and one source of truth. With NetSuite, you reduce IT costs because NetSuite lives in the cloud with no hardware required, accessed from anywhere. You cut the cost of maintaining multiple systems because you've got one unified business management suite. You improve efficiency by bringing all your major business processes into one platform, slashing manual tasks and errors. Over 37,000 companies have already made the move. So do the math. See how you'll profit with NetSuite. By popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to netsuite.com/smirconish. 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 Debt, it keeps you tossing and turning at night. You can't get away from it. But the truth is, the system is designed to trap you in debt. Insanely high interest credit cards and loans make it nearly impossible to pay off your debt. There's a new way out of the debt trap, Pivotal Debt Solutions. Pivotal Debt Solutions isn't like the old school debt relief companies that string your debt out for years. They have new aggressive strategies that can end your debt faster and easier than you thought possible. Pivotal Debt Solutions can cut or even eliminate interest, find programs to write off your balances so that you owe less, stop those threatening phone calls, without bankruptcy and without a loan. Bottom line, they find every solution possible to end your debt permanently. Before you do anything, contact Pivotal Debt Solutions first. Talk to them for free. Find out how fast they can help you get out of debt. Visit zapmydebt.com. Zapmydebt.com. Zapmydebt.com.
Hey there. I host a show called Therapy Gecko, where I dress up as a lizard and talk to anonymous strangers from the internet about their lives. They tell me their relationship problems.
I found out I was related to the guy that I was dating.
Their hobbies.
I collect my roommate's toenails and fingernails.
Their secrets.
When we did not have toilet paper, I would use the shower curtain.
And also sometimes kind of serious stuff.
I have anxiety when I talk to people.
I'm also sometimes joined by celebrity guests like Doja Cat, Lil Yachty, Bobby Lee, and Eric Andre. Some of the more interesting calls we've gotten recently include a guy who argued with a demon living on his wall, a caller drunk at his job at a middle school, and a caller wondering whether or not he should transform into a dog. So if you're sick of your own life and you want to get lost in the life of a stranger, search for Therapy Gecko wherever you get your podcasts.
Listen to Michael live weekdays on POTUS, SiriusXM channel 124, and on the SXM app.
Gang, thank you so much for these phone calls. I think we're all about to learn things. Debbie, in St. Augustine, yes. Tell me about your situation. I'm intrigued.
I'm not very wealthy, but we were a couple that were childless. moved from Michigan, sold all of our physical assets, moved to Florida, decided maybe we'll rent for a while. Now we've decided we're going to rent forever. We had this cash. You know, when you sell a couple of homes, well, then you've got all this cash. Went to the bank, and I do have one account that's over $250,000. We still had CDs. We've got money markets, checking, savings, but adding them all up, they were over their limit. So she moved things around, and she said, well, it's really per depositor. So it's really $500,000 if you're a married couple. That's all I had to say.
So you went yesterday in the wake of all of this to learn, should you be doing something?
Yes.
And what are you going to do?
It's a smaller bank.
Right. And so what are you going to do?
I just moved some of the money around.
Right.
And she did it. And she informed us, as long as you have two people, it really is $500,000 per account.
So
per checking, per savings, per CD, for money market.
So you're the perfect person with whom I wanted to speak today, because I figure there are a lot of people doing exactly that. I'm curious, it doesn't sound like you removed anything from this bank. I was curious to know if you had, how hard of a sell did they try and give you to keep it exactly where it was?
Oh, no, they did not.
They did not.
Don't worry about it. Yeah.
Okay. I mean,
one thing I was questioning, not for myself, but what happens if I'm a small business owner and I have employees and I have a whole monthly payroll sitting in there? That could be over $250,000.
No doubt about it.
What about those type of people?
Right. Well, that was part of the White House argument as to why they had to protect, especially at this bank that caters to the tech industry. This is why they needed to protect beyond $250,000 or north of $250,000. My response would be to say, I don't think it's prudent, even if you're a small business owner, has to make payroll, to have that kind of money in one particular bank. Like, nobody should do that. Isn't that common sense?
I don't know. You look at somebody like, you know, big box stores and factories, you know, one payroll is over $250,000. So, you know, it's, I don't know.
Got to hedge.
Talk about it.
Yeah. Well, thank you. You responded, and I appreciate that very much. Thank you very much. Well, Pam, I think, was going to say what I just said. Pam, you're in Montana. Greetings.
Greetings. When you were reading the definition of a bailout, you mentioned something about risky behavior. Well, I believe that if you put more than $250,000 in a bank, that is risky behavior. And just like one of your callers yesterday talked about an insurance plan, if your house burns down and you're insured for $500,000 and it costs you $600,000 to rebuild, too bad. That was risky behavior.
You doing anything different with your banking in Montana?
No, I don't have over $250,000 in our credit union, but I would if I had more than
right. But even for those who don't, I wonder if there are folks who, whether it's a regional credit union, whether it's a regional bank, whether it's a local bank, I just wonder if people today are making a move and going with the largest players in banking because they're somehow distrustful. I'm not encouraging that. I don't think there's reason for that. I'm just trying to understand what's been the response to the White House yesterday.
Mm-hmm. I don't know.
Doesn't sound like you're doing anything.
No, not at this point, but I am going to call and talk to some of the managers and just get their feeling. But I think I'm okay. But I do believe it's risky to put more than.
Of course, I say of course. I wouldn't. Yeah, I don't think anybody should be putting that kind of money in any one financial institution. Thank you for that phone call. All right, Dan, I want to bring Andrew from Chicago and Jennifer from Kansas City on together. How shall I do that? Or should I do nothing?
You should do nothing. Let's bring in Andrew from Chicago.
All right. Perfect.
Uh-huh. And you said Jennifer from Kansas City. Very
nice.
Good. Hello.
Thank
Here
you.
We go.
Andrew, greetings. You are in Chicago. What I'm told is that your view is this is a bailout just like 2008. Jennifer, I am told this is not a bailout like 2008. First of all, Andrew, does that, in simple terms, reflect your view?
Yes, and the reason I say that is this. In 2008, when they saved the big banks, they saved both investors, executives, investors, executives, and depositors. Here, they're saving depositors and investors who have deposited more than $250,000 because, like your last caller, those guys are taking risks. They're no longer depositors. They're investors. And to the extent that they save those types of individuals, they're bailing them out.
Right. But in this case, there are going to be investors, shareholders who are not going to be made whole. They're going to lose. That's a difference from 2000.
Those are Class A investors. I'm talking about the Class B investors.
All right. Your position is this is a bailout. Jennifer, how do you see it?
I don't. I see it. FDIC insurance is what the banks pay into, and it's paying out to the depositors. Yes, there are some depositors that shouldn't have that much money in the bank, but they do. And there's a lot of depositors that have way less than that. So it's going to even out on the insurance side of it. I don't see it as a bailout because we're not bailing out the owners of the bank, the big investors of the bank. Back in 2008, basically, Bush gave Paulson a blank check to bail all those idiots out and cover the golden parachutes. We're not doing that this time.
Andrew?
Well, I think you're right to an extent. We're not doing exactly that, but to the extent that you're saving people who took the risk, investors, and put more than $250,000 in those accounts, you're helping those guys out. Whether they're Class A investors, Class B, or Class C investors, they're still risk takers. Therefore, they're investors, and you're saving them.
Jennifer's response to and reference of President Bush is just a reminder to me of you've heard me say this, ideology seems to play no role. It's like the house is on fire, and how are we going to maximize the amount of water that we have, which is of limited capacity, to try and stop the damage? And whether you're philosophically conservative on fiscal matters or more liberal or progressive, it doesn't matter. Everybody just wants to try and dampen the situation. That was probably a ridiculous comment. I was simply trying to make an observation that the politics are not what get practiced at the top. Go ahead. You get a final statement, Jennifer. Go ahead.
No one should put that much money in the bank. Diversify. Cover yourself. And pay attention to what your bank is doing.
Thank you, Jennifer. Appreciate both of you.
This is the Smirconish Podcast from SiriusXM.
Hey, quick math. The less your business spends on operations, on multiple systems, on delivering your product or service, the more margin you have and the more money you keep. But with higher expenses on materials, employees, distribution, and borrowing, everything costs more. NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, HR into one platform and one source of truth. With NetSuite, you reduce IT costs because NetSuite lives in the cloud with no hardware required, accessed from anywhere. You cut the cost of maintaining multiple systems because you've got one unified business management suite. You improve efficiency by bringing all your major business processes into one platform, slashing manual tasks and errors. Over 37,000 companies have already made the move. So do the math. See how you'll profit with NetSuite. By popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to netsuite.com/smirconish. netsuite.com/smirconish. netsuite.com/smirconish.
People today can spend half their lives over 50. So it's good to be financially ready for what's important to you as you get older, like a family vacation.
Cannonball!
Or starting your dream business.
Welcome to Connie's Coffee. How may I help you?
AARP's trusted financial tools can help you plan for whatever your future holds. That's why the younger you are, the more you need AARP. Start planning today at aarp.org/moneytools.
Hey there. I host a show called Therapy Gecko, where I dress up as a lizard and talk to anonymous strangers from the internet about their lives. They tell me their relationship problems.
I found out that I was related to the guy that I was dating.
Their hobbies.
I collect my roommate's toenails and fingernails.
Their secrets.
When we did not have toilet paper, I would use the shower curtain.
And also sometimes kind of serious stuff.
I have anxiety when I talk to people.
I'm also sometimes joined by celebrity guests like Doja Cat, Lil Yachty, Bobby Lee, and Eric Andre. Some of the more interesting calls we've gotten recently include a guy who argued with a demon living on his wall, a caller drunk at his job at a middle school, and a caller wondering whether or not he should transform into a dog. So if you're sick of your own life and you want to get lost in the life of a stranger, search for Therapy Gecko wherever you get your podcasts.
Listen to Michael live weekdays on POTUS, Sirius XM channel 124, and on the SXM app.
So some of us are just speculating what it would be like to be in the position of a business that is an SVB customer, had more than $250, now wants to access their funds. Karen is in Pennsylvania and is in that position, maybe not the excess of $250, but tell me about your business relationship with SVB and what yesterday was like.
This is Karen. Are you talking to me?
I am. Hi.
So I actually work for a small private equity firm, so it was not my personal money, but I'm the business manager, and it was chaos yesterday. I listen to you almost every day. I have no idea what you talked about yesterday because we spent from 7 a.m. till 9 p.m. trying to get access to our funds. The website probably crashed every minute and a half. And, so even though they said we would all have access to funds, even if it's just the insured funds, there was almost no access to get money. We had to make payroll yesterday, credit cards, you know, those auto pays, you put your utilities on your credit card. They shut down our credit cards. We had our website go down because it wasn't paid. The one thing about the 250 is we're a small private equity firm, but we had three different investments going out on Friday to other small businesses who were making payrolls and investing and having jobs, and every one of those investments did not go on Friday, and that was the reason why we had over 250, because we were sending out wires to companies that we invest in to really do any kind of business, and we're small to have multiple banks to try to pull together $1 million from four different banks to have four different wires from different companies. I already have 30 bank accounts as it is with what we do, that would become, 120 bank accounts. and so it's really a matter of trying to keep the small business running, paying our things, but we are not, like that gentleman earlier said, Class B investors. I don't consider that depositors are Class B investors. Our money's coming in and out. We're using the bank services. We're not investing in the bank. We're not sitting there stockpiling money, sitting with no reason in the bank. It's functioning. It's keeping the economy going. It's keeping small businesses afloat.
What ended up happening by 9 p.m.? Did you have access to the money?
Well, we took all day because, when you send money out for institutional stuff, one person can't send a wire. So, we would all got on a Zoom, our whole team, and we, spent probably 5 hours just saying, can you get in? Okay, great. You load this wire. And then someone else would have to try to get in to approve the wire. And it took hours and hours. And I just checked this morning, and out of the maybe 20 wires that we sent, about 8 of them never went, even though it says they went, they didn't go. So, and then for us, you need two approvers to approve anything over 250. So we couldn't even get one person logged in, so we had to send a bunch of small wires. And it was pretty chaotic yesterday. And the small companies we're investing in, they're missing payroll. And
right, the ripple effect is instantaneous.
It was. And so,
But Karen, it sounds like although with some imperfections, And I understand 8 of them weren't received. You've got to deal with that today. But you weren't limited to $250. You had access, it seems like, to all the money that you would have had a week ago.
Yes, we did. Mm-hmm. But that's, it's a technical term because there was access, but you couldn't get into the website to access anything. So even if you, you know, technically the money is ours, I guess if I walked into the branch in California, I could have done something directly, but there was no access yesterday to actually move your money in any kind of a smooth way because the technology could not support the demand that was happening.
And
we had multiple browsers loaded, you know, Google wasn't getting anybody in, but if you went to Firefox, maybe you'd get in. I mean, it was that kind of a situation to just try to get your money out. And
I was
trying to make our payroll.
You're also disabusing myself and others of the observation that, well, you know, only a fool would have more than $250,000 in one bank. Maybe if you're a retiree and you're doing nothing and you've got all of your assets liquid and in one bank, that's foolish. But I get what you're saying. If you're a small private equity firm, practically speaking, you do need to have some consolidation in one place for funding like you're doing this week. I get it.
Exactly, exactly. And the other thing, you know, the one thing to say about SVB is that, you know, if you look, Forbes listed it as a great bank at the beginning of last week. I don't remember what place it listed it at, but, you know, we as depositors were getting very positive feedback from Forbes and other services. So we did not have any reason to worry. And we're not a company that's on the inside track of,
sure,
of, you know, like they are out in California. We're on East Coast. But so it was a pretty big of a shock. The other part is the big banks, you know, don't offer the tools to borrow money that these private equity and venture capital firms need because they're not willing to look at the collateral that isn't, you know, the way that the collateral works and the legal documents around it. So it's very hard. And First Republic and SVB, you know, kind of catered to what these companies were doing. And, you know, our loans are backed. You know, we have loans out with SVB. We borrowed way more than we had on account. So net, we're fine. But, you know, getting to when we can actually get money and hold things out. But the big banks aren't willing to talk to the smaller companies. They're not
totally
willing
get
to
it.
Lend money.
It sounds like you may have another long day ahead of you. I'm really appreciative
yeah.
that you would call and lay this out, and I'm grateful. Thank you so much.
Well, I was
Good
listening
luck.
To you while I was chewing up, teeing up things, and I thought I got to call in because people don't get what's really happening. It's not a bunch of old rich people with money sitting in the bank. It's small entrepreneurs working hard, keeping the economy going, and that's where I believe allowing full deposits isn't a bailout. It's giving people access to the money that's keeping the economy moving.
Well, that was well presented. Thank you so much for it.
Thanks.
The Smirconish Podcast for independent minds.
Listen to Michael Smirconish live weekdays from 9 a.m. to noon east on SiriusXM's POTUS Channel 124 or anytime on the SXM app.
Connect with Michael on Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, and at Smirconish.com.
People today can spend half their lives over 50. So it's good to be financially ready for what's important to you as you get older, like a family vacation.
Cannonball!
Or starting your dream business.
Welcome to Connie's Coffee. How may I help you?
AARP's trusted financial tools can help you plan for whatever your future holds. That's why the younger you are, the more you need AARP. Start planning today at aarp.org/moneytools.
Hey there. I host a show called Therapy Gecko, where I dress up as a lizard and talk to anonymous strangers from the internet about their lives. They tell me their relationship problems.
I found out that I was related to the guy that I was dating.
Their hobbies.
I collect my roommate's toenails and fingernails.
Their secrets.
When we did not have toilet paper, I would use the shower curtain.
And also sometimes kind of serious stuff.
I have anxiety when I talk to people.
I'm also sometimes joined by celebrity guests like Doja Cat, Lil Yachty, Bobby Lee, and Eric Andre. Some of the more interesting calls we've gotten recently include a guy who argued with a demon living on his wall, a caller drunk at his job at a middle school, and a caller wondering whether or not he should transform into a dog. So if you're sick of your own life and you want to get lost in the life of a stranger, search for Therapy Gecko wherever you get your podcasts.